Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, Alito, and WRMJ.com. Good to have you along on this Saturday morning. One housekeeping announcement because of our inclement weather, or lack thereof, kind of today. Tab Bomber, unfortunately, had to take a rain check today because he is clearing the roads and keeping us safe. So Tab Bomber cannot be with us today. We'll get him in later. And Heath Smith is joining us, a longtime youth coach and helping out with the Sherrard basketball program, coaching at the junior high level. And I know Heath and I were talking off the air that we're bummed that Tab Ballmer can't be here because he was coming on today. In addition to talking about youth sports, he was bringing in the resolution that reestablishes the Olympic Conference. He'll have to do that at another time. He was just looking for the signatures from the eight superintendents, and I think he said he had six of the eight lined up.
Wouldn't it be great to have the Olympic Conference back? Wouldn't it be great?
And I'm just kidding, everybody. Calm down. But I'm a believer that that conference should be reassembled, or we should look at that. All right, good morning, Mr. Heath Smith. Thanks for coming in.
No problem. Thank you, Jim.
Well, I know we want to talk about youth sports, junior high sports, maybe a little bit about how the culture has changed a little bit. But for those most Sherrard people know, Heath has been helping us out the last couple of years with our football broadcasts on Friday nights. And, of course, a coach in the school district. So your investment in the school district is pretty important. I remember about 20-some-odd years ago, and I think you would say the same thing, I was at an event where Joel Brunsvold was at Sherrard. They were having the ribbon cutting for the baseball-softball complex that's duly noted, named in his honor, and he said, I cut myself shaving today coming to this event, and I bled purple and gold.
I would say
that Heath Smith bleeds purple and gold, right?
I'm one of the many that bleed purple and gold. Graduated from there in 98. Been coaching out there. I think this was year 10, I believe. We figured out off the air, so at the junior high level, and been involved in the youth level for a year or two before that. So, yeah, I'm one of those guys, along with like Coach Swanson and probably Coach Munson and a couple of those other people out there that – you know, the other school colors wouldn't look good on us.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that I can say about you, and I've talked about this many times with guys that do it right, and kids, they know. They're smart enough to know when you're invested in them and you care about them. And how they realize that is they see when you show up to their other events that you're not coaching, and I'm not talking about just maybe a sporting event that you don't coach, but other activities as well. They're smart enough and intuitive to know, I know this person cares about my life outside of what he coaches me in.
Yeah.
And those are the coaches that have the most success and get the biggest buy-in from the kid.
I wouldn't say it's just, there's a lot of coaches out at Sherrard. Just to use the girls basketball program, Coach Swanson, you know, you'll see him at a volleyball game. You'll see him at softball games. You'll see him at a track meet. Coach Munson football, you know, he's at other events. And I think that's a one great thing about Sherrard is the other coaches, we do support each other. And, you know, we want to see the other program be successful. And, you know, that's part of it is trying to build that culture out there where, especially in the girls basketball program, because I can talk about it because I'm a part of it, is – we're at each other's games. And we're not talking just varsity. We're not just talking junior high. We're talking, you go to a youth basketball game at the Tiger Tip-Off, and you might see a couple coaches there and parents from other teams just because of the buy-in that we get.
All right. And interactive today, the account is at WRMJ2, at WRMJ2. If you want to tweet at a question, Heath, just send it to me, and we'll pass it along. You said one of your friends wanted to talk about professional wrestling in the NBA.
Yes, my buddy last night wanted to have a call-in show. He wanted to talk professional wrestling and how the Houston Rockets were winning the NBA title this year.
All right. Maybe we can do that next week. You helped out. What, last 2 years doing football with us? 3 years?
Last year was year three.
Okay. So, you know, and I noticed how really invested you are into that, too. I tell people, I haven't told people this story, but I know the one time this year you threw your pencil or pen out of the press box.
I think we fumbled the football again.
Yeah, frustrating moment. But I'm saying it's that type of stuff that, you know, you like staying involved in those type of activities.
Yeah, and you know, I've coached in the girls program for 8 years, but I did coach boys junior high basketball for a couple of years during that. Or actually, I coached for 5 years. And you get to know the kids. And just because they, you know, I'm coaching girls now, you see the kids when they're junior high, you get to know them. and you want them to have success. And I know our football program has struggled over the last couple of years, and I give credit to the kids that are still out, because there's some kids that, you know, could be playing or don't play because they're doing other things. And the kids, you know, you look at the record, but they night in, night out, they're there. And I want to use a kid like Cole Bazzari. What a great kid. Kid works his butt off. And how many nights on Friday nights did we see him get just his bell rung and he popped right back up?
Yep. Well, and that's why I tell, you know, last year I had so much fun. I really loved last season doing Girard football, and I'm looking forward to next season. I had fun, and I thought, you know, when I reflect on last year, the only time I was really like, oh, come on, man, we're better than this, and I'm speaking we collectively, because when I broadcast, I invest in that type of stuff, is the night they lost up at Prophetstown, Terry Prophetstown. That's kind of the only game that I thought really got away, but I thought, you know, the eight other weeks, I'm like, hey, man, those kids are landed on the line, and they continue to show up, and they're trying to get some things accomplished. And I thought they were right there a couple times, and, you know, I'm expecting much better things next year in terms of wins and losses.
Yeah, and in the 3 years I've done it, I think the coolest one was the win at Hall. What was that, 2 years ago? Yeah. My cousin Grant was a senior, and, you know, I think they broke, what was it, like a 21-game or 19-game, you know, and just to watch them, to kind of take control, and it's like, okay, yeah, this is what it feels like. This is what Friday night should be like. And I think they're going to get it done. Eventually it's going to happen. They're going to turn it around. You know, Coach Munson's a great guy. He coached me in JV basketball. Talk about one of the most stand-up guys you'll ever meet. And he's quiet, and some people kind of take that a little differently. But once you get to know him, he's a great guy. The kids really respect him. And I think that's the big thing, is the kids will run through a wall for him.
Yeah, and see, I knew we were going to get a little bit off beaten track here, because this hour is going to fly by, and you bring up a good point about what, you know, how you measure and how you compare. And, you know, in those years, in terms of wins and losses, when you don't have near the success in the wins compared to another era, people always want to compare those two eras. And I say, well, okay, let's compare those two eras. Are you saying, with all things being equal, the talent level in 2017 is equal to the talent level of 1993? And I'm not talking about just Girard. I can use the examples of Mercer County / Aledo, and I can use I'll speak as my son, who graduated in 2016, and his team, when people were saying, well, you know, why isn't this team 9-0 like the 1998 Aledo Green Dragons team? Well, because the 1998 Aledo Green Dragons team was a lot better than the 2016 Mercer County team. I mean, some of that is in play. Effort may not change, but sometimes talent level is just different.
Yeah, it's, you know, you got to have talent regardless.
And that's why I hate those comparisons. Well, we won all the time in that era. Well, you had an unbelievable 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 different athletes that were really good.
You know, you look at like Rockridge basketball right now and the run they have. You are a better coach and program when you have a Division I basketball player on your team and a Division II top scorer. It makes your basketball program just a lot better. And you look at a school like Rockridge, I mean, they were better teams. Tyson Blazer was one of the best basketball players around. And, you know, he didn't have the talent that Ethan Happ or the Heath kid. And then you look at the bit parts those guys had around him. Lucas Johnson, and he went to Rockridge, was one of my favorite kids to watch in a basketball for, because he did all the little things.
He was hardly mentioned. Yeah. He was still one of the greatest players ever, but because he played with Ethan Happ and Brian Heath. I mean,
if those two aren't there, he's probably the leading scorer. But, yeah. I mean, just kids like that. And you know, Toby's a great coach, but he's a lot better coach when you have talent. And that's with everything. If you have talent, you're going to win more. And it's not college or pros, where it's a more level playing field.
All right. In the process of how all this works and how this comes together, we begin when we start playing. All right. So we talk about youth sports and we talk about junior high sports. Now, youth sports, in terms of expansion, has went through the absolute roof, as they say, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, everybody, there's really no such thing as rec leagues anymore. There's minimal, I know the YMCA has a little bit of a rec league, but most of it's travel. And the opinion of travel, I think why it took off is, and there's this fine line, right? You always have to determine with yourself and with your program, is rec league not conditioning kids enough for cause and effect. By that I'm saying wins and losses. And then you have to distinguish then with youth leagues, is too much being placed on winning and not enough on development. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of in terms of when my oldest got involved, I thought, well, we need a little more than rec league. I think there needs to be more emphasis maybe on winning, more serious commitment, that type of stuff. But then I look back at my personal development and youth coaching, and I say maybe as he went along, we worried too much about winning and not enough on development.
Yeah, and when you first start out, I can speak this, 11, 12 years ago, when I had a fifth grade team, and I coached with actually your guest last week, Coach Jones. We were really concerned about the wins, but now as we've gotten a little older, I stay in the youth program on the girls' side, we kind of talk about really when we need to start winning is probably around sixth grade, winning a little more. When they're younger, it's all about development, doing it the right way, teaching the kids the game of basketball on our end. Once we get to junior high, we kind of ramp that up a little bit. Winning's a little more important, but you still got to play kids. And I remember Mike making a comment, and I remember what he was talking about as a parent. Well, we could have won that game. Well, that's great, but we have 12 kids, and at practice, we have 9 that we really think, or 10 that we really think can help us. You don't know, and there's been a couple kids that didn't start playing basketball till eighth grade that by the time they were in varsity, they were a starter. So you don't know, and it's – I think emphasis on winning has been placed a little too much. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek me saying that because when people watch me, they probably think that's all that guy cares about is winning. Yes, we do want to win, but at the same point in time, at the younger levels, and Doug stresses it very much, winning is fun, it's great, but we need to make sure the kids are learning and they're doing things the right way. And like you said, when the kids understand, they get it. Kids are smarter than we give them credit for. And, as long as you do it the right way, eventually it's going to pay off. The results are going to be there.
The one thing, the one concept I really liked when my daughter was heavy into ASA, my oldest daughter, is the way ASA is set up. It's all basically all tournaments. Now, there's a league in, what is that, Jacobs Park?
Jacobs,
Moline,
yep,
right?
Correct.
So there's like a league that's more, you work on things during the week. Most ASA teams, the elite level ASA teams that are in the league, they really don't worry about keeping score. It's more of a practice situational thing. And then I think most of the ASA tournaments are set up where Friday, Saturday, pool play, and then it's tournament play on Sunday. So those pool play games you can use as development situations where most kids get a play, and then most coaches will tell you then, hey, man, I'm playing my best team on Sunday because it's tournament day, and you may not play that Sunday or may get limited play. But, you look at basketball and how youth basketball is set up. A lot of times it's just tournament play, right, where
There is a couple, like the Blackhawk Basketball League, Ken Fry runs it.
Yeah, that's where you get a game a week.
That's a game a week up there. And let me tell you, that league for us, for as a coach, is invaluable. I mean, I know until we switched to junior high girls seasons, we'd go play tournaments on Saturday, and our league games were Sunday. And that was one of our things, is Saturday we're going to play to win. And we always got everybody in. But on Sunday, we went to those league games. And there were some Saturdays where you played 4 or 5 games, and you had a couple girls that were real tired. And it's like, you can put your shoes on, but don't expect to get on the floor much, But that stuff's invaluable because it's hard, for instance, on like a basketball team. Those 8 to 10 to 12 games you get a year, that's something that the kids can never – you can't replace at practice. You can't – I don't care what you do at practice. It's still a game situation that makes them better.
Yeah, and, we talk about the balance that you have, trying to find the equal balance in all of this has to be so tough. And I think, coaching and this is amazing for me to say, when the high school coaches listen, I think coaching at the youth and junior high level is more challenging than coaching in terms of the pressure than at the high school level. I think there's some of that at the high school level. You see that with playing time. That's everywhere. But I think at the junior high and youth level, it's interesting. I remember when John Elder was on last year, a couple years ago, we sat and had a conversation. I asked him about, could John Elder of 1974 coach in 2017 or 2016? And he said, well, yeah, he goes, but I'd probably be in jail if I did because of how culture has changed in how kids were dealt with. And one of the things he said, you know, when I first started coaching, basically the kid's dad showed up to the games. That was it, right? Go along 10 years, mom and dad come to the game. Go along 5 more years, mom and dad, grandpa come to the game. Now mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, both sets of grandparents come to the game, aunts and uncles. So what are they worried about when they go? They're worried about what thing? What one thing?
Playing time.
They're worried about that, their grandkid, their niece, their nephew, or whatever. And then, of course, the kid probably hears about that a little bit after the game from somewhere, something. And that can escalate. And I think that's one of the big changes with youth sports, is when you go to youth sporting events and you see the gyms, and I'm not telling you, you can't go to those games, grandma and grandpa, but I'm just saying that changes a lot of the complexion from not only the game management of the coach and the kid, but the officiating and things of that nature. Because you see a lot of the behavior with, you know, some of the people that are complaining about officials. Maybe it's not the parent. Maybe it's the grandparent, or maybe it's the aunt or uncle or whatever, if you see what I'm saying. Long story short.
You do see it. I will say this. I will give my kids, my family's credit. I think in the 10 or some whatever years I've been doing it out there, I think we've had two issues with playing time. And I can talk of the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, I can speak of one family, and they know who I'm probably talking about. So grandma and grandpa don't miss a game. Great-grandpa don't miss a game. And we get goodbye, and our fans, our parents are great. They understand what we're about, what we're trying to do. Do you see it from other schools? Absolutely. You know, I know this year we're at an unnamed rival school that's next door to us that Coach Chandler took a little bit of a butt chewing walking off because the game got down to 8 points with 2 minutes left. He put his starters back in and pressed just to get the lead back up to double digits. And this lady went nuts on him, and she looked at me, and I'm like, I'm sitting over here with my kids. We're getting ready to take the floor. And she's yelling at me. I'm like, I don't know what you want him to do. So it's gotten a little more boisterous, I think, on referees, on things like that. But like I said, from our standpoint, and I'm not just saying this because we're on the radio, I have great parents, great families, great kids. And on our end, we kind of talk about it at the beginning of the year with the kids, with the parents at our meeting. So you usually don't get a whole lot from our end. And if you do, I'm usually the first one to say, hey, kind of, you know, let's tone it back a little bit out of the stands.
Do you see, and I know you're involved in the JP sports, we can talk about that with that. That's a lot of the baseball
yep.
Tournaments. You know, at the younger levels, you see more, they talk about at the, you know, older levels now in high school about the multi-sport athlete isn't there as much because of sports specialization. And I think a lot of that is now because most sports are year-round, so they're not, I always contend, they're not sport athletes, they're multi-season athletes, as they play their sport in multi-seasons, which basically equates to the same thing, that they're multi-sport athletes, but they're just playing the same sport over multiple seasons. You see more of that at the younger levels now, you think?
I think so. You know, I'm just as guilty of as the next one, as our kids were on break this week, and next Wednesday we're having open gym. But I will say this, I have kids and parents, hey, when's the next open gym? They want to come in and get shots up. When you're doing stuff outside of the season, you got to make it fun. You can't make it mandatory. We're not running sprints. We're not running plays. They're just coming to the gym and shooting, maybe doing a couple drills, some ball handling drills. But, yeah, it's a lot of these seasons are starting to run 9-10 months, and I think people feel the pressure that if their kid doesn't do it come high school time, they're not going to play. They're not going to, you know, get their opportunity. And it's sad that it's sad a little bit that's came to that, maybe, because, you know, there's a lot of kids that you see, they just run ragged, you know, between getting good grades and going to three sports. It's going to be tough.
Yeah,
and, you know, doing family stuff. And it's tough. And I give parents credit because some of these parents, they run like crazy. And I know when I was growing up, we played a lot and my parents didn't run close to that. So I give the kids credit because, you know, they show up every day and work their butts off.
You said, and this is interesting, and I think a lot of it now is how kids are conditioned a little bit. Because they said to you, you brought up, said, they call you up to get shots on their own. I'm like, oh. When you said that, I'm like, okay, well, isn't there like a park at Matherville, or isn't there a park at Girard where you can actually take a ball in your hand, because you got 27 of them in your garage, you know, and you can't go out there and shoot on your own. That's the one thing that just drives me bananas. But in the same breath, and this is me talking, I conditioned my oldest boy to play youth league basketball, and the only way that they really could do it is they wanted to have practice, they wanted to play games, they wanted to have officials there, they wanted to have clock running, score kept. They don't. That's on me conditioning them to, that's the expectation they have for playing basketball of, no, here's a ball, there's a hoop, there's 17 hoops in Aledo that you can go play on if you want to go get your shot better. But that's me.
Yeah, and
but that's me conditioned. That's me as a parent, and that's, I think, how the conditioning of my generation. We've conditioned kids, in my opinion, to that's how the game is played now. It's total organization. It has to be organized.
And I could show you that I probably have a couple of text or pictures saved where I do actually have some girls that go out and shoot. Mom and dad might send a picture.
Well, and you can tell the kids who do that, too.
And I got one of them that lives in Viola, and I won't name her name because she'll get embarrassed. But I worry about her shooting at home because she might lower the hoop to 8.5 foot, not 10. But I always joke about her that I'm going to move in next to her, so, you know, lock her hoop at 10 foot. But I think it's great the fact that they want to get in the gym. You know, our 2B 8th grade group, there was 12 of them that went to Jordan Delp once a week for 8 weeks after our season was over. And I'll tell you what, they, you know, we had a long season and they showed up, and I give them credit because they were excited to be there. And, you know, we actually had an open gym at 6 o'clock in the morning 1 week because they all wanted to go in and do their homework. Their homework was shooting for Jordan, and it, you know, there's a foot of snow on the ground. It's cold out. So we were at the junior high gym at 6 o'clock in the morning so they get their shots up. That way they wouldn't get in trouble on Thursday.
All right. So you, let me ask you, you started the Red Devils, what year? You did some youth baseball, 2000.
All right. I have to say 2000 because if not, Rusty Plunkett will text me or call me right away. I had a group in 2000, Rusty Plunkett, Phil Bodine, Nick Fisher. We had just a team. And then in 2006, me and Todd Bennett started it back up. And I think there's two teams this year still in the program.
Okay. Yeah, well, and if I can take a moment to preach a little bit here, all right? You want to take a drink of your Mountain Dew. Dude, you drink too much Mountain Dew, by the way.
It's keeping me up this morning, Jim.
You have high blood pressure probably, don't you?
No, low blood pressure.
Oh, you
do? Yeah.
Okay. Well, you brought up, like, youth baseball. I just want to say how fortunate my experience was as a parent with my – Ty played for Tom Sharp. Thankful. I think he's – I don't know. He's not coaching anymore, but I'm thankful Ty got to play.
By the way, Tom Sharp needs to be coaching baseball again.
I agree.
I know his boys are older.
His wife will say it takes him 27 hours. There's only 24 hours in a day, and he works 27 hours on the field and then has
his
job and his role as a father.
Tom needs to coach
too, but he makes
needs to go coach baseball somewhere.
Yeah, and then I know Eric Russell coached my boy, and I was a pleasure with him. And then watching you and Coach Bazal in the early days of the Red Devils, those were the right type of dude. And that's why baseball's good in this area, because guys like you that were invested in those kids at a young level. But you brought up, so what year was the first year with the Red Devils?
2000.
And that's really when it kind of started. I mean, the Hitmen had always been around, but then, you know, you saw groups like the Red Devils get resurrected, Aledo Knights, things of that nature. And I know that the Red Devils still have a very strong foundation. And I think they almost have, they play their games, their league games, a lot of them at basically every park around the Mercer County area, and then the Knights, I still think, are still active, and then the Archangels, is it?
Yeah, they got four or five teams.
But so the lessons, though, you know, the business model of this is the transition from when I grew up, when it was Little League, a kid of the 80s, right? And so you basically went from Little League to whatever to Legion Baseball, right? So now this youth baseball expansion. So I'd say 2000s that really went through the, and I'd say what the last probably 10 years is when it just
astronomically. Last 10 years, it's
there's like everybody's got a team.
Yes, yes.
So coinciding with that growth, but I would say the same amount of kids played baseball prior to that. It was just rec league baseball.
Correct.
It wasn't quote unquote travel baseball, and maybe some of our listeners, we can get into the definition of what travel baseball is, now. But coinciding with the growth of travel baseball is the growth of the skilled coaching. Pay $15, pay $25 to go to hitting lessons, to go to pitching lessons. Now, I've been to a lot of youth baseball games over the years, and I don't notice the tremendous amount of change, really, in my opinion. And maybe that's just me. I mean, is it more of a business model, do you think, or is it working? And I guess that's an unfair question maybe to ask, because basically you have to go case by case. Well, who's your coach? Things of that nature to determine if it's working. But I'm just saying, when I hear not only – see, this is my complaint with ASA. Not only you had your commitment when you played high-level ASA, right? Not only did you have your commitment with your team to go to practice how many times a week? If you played on an elite-level team, maybe at least three times a week. And then you'd play two times a week. Then you'd play on the weekends. And if you're on a good team, you basically play till Sunday night. So you play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe. And then on top of your practices during the week, if you're required to have a hitting lesson, right? And then if you're a pitcher, you have to have a pitching lesson too. My question: how can you play another sport?
Very tough. Very tough. That's something that each parent or each kid has to decide on their own. I guess to me, I don't have to make the decision. I was fortunate enough in our baseball program, whether on our team, Coach Basala, sticked, as I refer to him. You know, he was a college baseball player. I don't think we had many kids that even went and hit with people or pitched with people. I think maybe a couple of them. But, you know, with him being around, and then you also had Tori Leffel, Rusty Plunkett, Nick Fisher, guys that knew, you know, they'd been around the game of baseball enough. Our kids, I don't know if they needed it. And I give Nick a ton of credit for the kids, the Ryan Garretts of the world, the Trenton Higginses, the A.J. Lines, you know, kids like that, because he probably had a bigger impact on them than he's ever going to realize. And he had him in high school. But a guy like that, he knows the game of baseball so well. And then you look at the group below them that Tyson Nylén played on, and Hayden Bennett, and kids like that. Todd Bennett, here's another guy that, great baseball mind, has been around it for a long time, understood the game of baseball so well. And, you know, Tori helped with them. And then, like you said, with Eric Russell, another guy that got kids prepared, you know, whether it was Ty or his son Blake or Riley Stark or kids like that. And, you know, I think if your coach is doing their job, I don't know if necessarily that extra stuff is needed. I'm not a hitting expert. I would never tell a kid I am. But if you're going to do it, I think you got to have a little bit of a kind of know what you're doing. Now, I was lucky enough when a kid needed a hitting, hey, go talk to Sticker Tori. You know, a kid needed some pitching help, hey, go talk to Sticker Tori. Yeah. I'm just here. I'm kind of the manager here. I'm going to make the phone calls. I'm going to carry the lineup card.
With you, Sam.
And I'm going to – no. It was all on Stick. You know, we let him make the decision. And I'm not – I wasn't smart enough or dumb enough, you know, to get in his way. So, you know, I think some of that's gotten a little out of control. But then, you know, I watch the girls I have next year – I'll have next year again – watch him at basketball with Jordan Delp, who, by the way, if you are looking to – Jordan's phenomenal. And just the stuff that – you know, it was almost a learning curve for me, because there was some stuff that I learned from him. You know, here's a guy that played 4 years at Augie. He trains Chasen Randall and Ethan Happ. And there's some stuff I'm thinking, okay, we can do that at practice next year. So I think it's gotten a little overboard, but I think it is needed. But I think your coach also has to have, you know, a little bit of a working knowledge of teaching some of that stuff.
Well, in my thing too, the talent level determines a lot of this. I mean, kids can pick things up easier, and what I tell people too, this is just my opinion, you can still excel without that, you know. And I don't know if that's considered an outlier today, that you don't have to go to hitting lessons, pitching lessons, are going to a specific strength and conditioning coach, that you still can excel at a high level not going there. And I think a lot of that, to me, is I see it kind of – it's almost an unfunded mandate. You have to go. I get that read now. My kids don't play anymore, but I get the feeling that basically it's the unfunded unfunded mandate requirement where, no, this isn't within the program that we're running, but you need to do it. We strongly recommend you do it, along with every other kid.
And with our basketball work, I could speak for what we just did. It was completely optional. I told parents, listen, if your schedule's too busy, please don't feel the need to go down to Moline. Now there is some kids that, you know, we have a girl in eighth grade that's already visited like five Division I softball schools. She's going to go play Division I softball. I get that. Her college is going to be paid for. You know, same thing with Riley Strangard when she was at Charter Spencer. Their college is going to get paid for, maybe a little effort, because you know what? 4 years of school, it's not cheap anymore. And I get that. But you know, I think there's a fine line there. As long as it doesn't become your life, I think, you know, as long as, well, I'm in volleyball season, but I got to go hit three times a week. You know, I think there's a fine line there that we kind of toe. And like I said, from our experience on our end, our kids are great.
But isn't the test, and this is for every parent and every coach to ask, if the test is, does the kid want to go? And the answer is no. And he complains or she complains every time about going to it, which that happens out there. Parents, be honest. Then isn't that the time to say, well,
it's not worth it.
Yeah, why are we doing it? What is the return? Well, I guess my question, long story short, return on investment.
Yes.
Do I see a return on investment in a lot of the sports I cover since 1990 in terms of when we have these skilled coaches coming in? Pete, I don't see a lot of change from 1990 to 2018, and maybe John Hoshek can chime in on this sometime if he's in, but I really don't see a tremendous amount of change of game. Like when we've talked to like Tom Wurzba, he was on here a couple years ago, and there's coaches that do it right that talk about skill development. You're one of them. And you can see fundamentally what's the IQ of the kid playing the game. Is that's something we don't even worry about anymore in a lot of the programs. And it's just that so much of the conditioning for kids is game at a younger level. And this is why I wanted to get Ballmer in here too. And I'm so bummed he wasn't here today about why football is always going to lose. Football's losing. And the simple reason football loses is because of the game practice ratio at every level, because you get kids play five games in the, what, fall, junior high football?
I know Sharp has like six. I think
they play. Yeah, and you have 2 weeks of preseason practice, then you have four practices a week, one game. So that equates to 5, 10, and there's, let's see, so what is that, 25, almost 25 practices to five games.
Yep.
So you go to youth baseball, you go to youth basketball, you get maybe two practices a week. Football. And then you're playing 10 games a weekend. And kids, we've conditioned kids that I enjoy playing the games. And I don't want to worry about development. And maybe they have it right and we have it wrong. I don't know. I think that's one of the – see, we get off the beaten track here and time runs long. But I think that's one of the issues I look at youth sports. So we get back to the return on investment. Again, what I see – and you can answer this. Do you think when you've seen all these – specific skill coaches come on board, these kids taking lessons. I'm not talking about within your program, okay?
In general.
I'm talking about going out on Tuesday, Friday, Saturday nights in the basketball season. We do one basketball, softball game a week. I go out and watch a lot of other games. Have you noticed that much of a difference?
I would say not much of a difference.
I notice strength. I mean, I think kids are a lot stronger, but I'm talking about skill – and IQ within the game across the board.
I don't think the difference, when you don't see the kids every day, you know, if a kid's from Fulton, Illinois, I will go back to it. I think the one good point you made was, if the kid's enjoying it and they really want to learn, then I think that's a good investment. If the kid's learning, because end of the day, sports teaches kids so much more than just the sport. It teaches about life. You know, you're going to fail. You're going to lose. You got to get back up on your feet. I mean, that's why I think it's so great, Frank Martin, the two things I've seen on him, where he says kids don't know nothing about nothing. You know, we've gotten soft as an older generation. And then his video last week about his kid, you know, basketball, I don't know if you watch him, where, you know, basically says, I ain't your coach. Somebody else needs to go talk to you. So, like I said, as long as they're enjoying it, I think it's good. I think it's when they're like you said, when they're getting drug to a lesson or to a practice, then I think that's time we need to reevaluate.
All right, so I want to, John's here, so you can pick up the mic. You didn't have a heart attack shoveling heavy snow. Thank goodness we were worried about you.
No, I'm
But you've been doing it since 1970, well, here at 79.
79.
So I asked him, you know, with these specific skill coaches, and I'm not saying they're not needed. That's not what I'm not saying. I say the kids that are truly invested want to do it. I can see return on investment from kids at most schools, but in terms of we talk about the IQ of the game, that type of stuff, when Wurzbach gets on and rants and raves about IQ and those type of things, and then just fundamentally how kids – I know you go absolutely ape about how kids shoot the ball. Every time when I come in and you watch a game, you go crazy. It's like, who's teaching them that or whatever? So those type of things in terms of the specialization of the specialization of the coaching, to me, the gains have not been – coinciding with the investment that's been made, if you understand what do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I helped get with my daughters. As I watched and broadcast games, I could see, you know, for example, Rockridge, Sherrard, and Orion softball teams, how good they were, and they played ASA ball, and they had that coaching and that type of thing. And I felt we needed to play ASA ball here, for example, in Aledo or Mercer County School District. To be competitive with them because, for example, Daryl, Bewley, I, we could coach the girls the right fundamentals, how to throw, how to hit, and all that type of stuff, but they needed to play that competition. And you also had to develop the pitching, and you also had to face the pitching because any time we played them in most of the times when my daughters were playing softball, if we were going to beat Rockridge, Sherrard, or Orion in softball, it was probably going to be a 2-1, 3-1 game, and they're going to have to screw up. They're going to have to walk us, do something, but we were not going to hit the ball and just beat them. And so my whole idea of starting the Aledo Explosion program that we had at one time three different age levels was not for college scholarships. It was just to get our players to the level that we could compete with those schools. Yeah. And it's like the, as I say, the Russian arms race. You have to get better or you're just going to get pounded every year. And if we had a girl good enough to play college softball, great. And I think the Finch girl, who is a pitcher, and my daughter Kelly, she was an invited walk-on at Illinois State. And those are the only two girls I know of that have played at the Division I level since the program got started. And you look at these other programs, too. But I don't care. It doesn't bother me that kids are going for that individualized instruction. If you can have Tyson Blazer teaching you how to hit, or some of these people they have in the Quad Cities, they're at Milan at that one place to teach your kid how to hit better. I think that's fine. But I think you should go into it with the thought that you are trying to help your son or daughter be as good a player as they can be. If the good Lord upstairs is going to determine maybe whether they're going to play college sports.
Yeah.
Now, for example,
not listening to what you're saying close enough, but you're saying for that kid to be the best they can be, and the definition of that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to play Division I college.
It may not mean they're going to play college ball at all. And the other thing, they say, oh, they play so many games. I've found a lot of times, depending on how it's structured, the kids love to play the games.
Well, there's no question about that.
As long as the kids like to play, and they're not, the minute the kid says, oh, we got a game today, or, oh, I got to go to practice today. The minute you hear that, that's it. We're done. But because, it's not worth it. And as parents, you really have to be invested. I always tell this story. When the girls were in school, there was a time period where Joe and I were at a softball diamond 55 straight days.
You still have dust in the back seat of your car, don't you?
Yeah, and it didn't, you know, for me, I liked it. Joe, it was okay. and whoever got tagged along, Julie or Lisa or whatever, when Kelly was playing or whatever, Julie didn't like going to the diamonds. Lisa loved going to the diamonds. Yeah. So anyway, that's the big thing is don't think you're trying to develop a Division I athlete. Like I said, when I think back basketball-wise, in all the years I've covered. Ethan Happ, Lawson, Eric, and he played middle.
Well, Tyson Blazer could have played if he wanted to play
right.
D1 basketball.
But you baseball. Can count that, and in football, and in baseball, I can count the number one, you know, the number of Division I athletes on both hands,
yeah.
over hundreds of kids over the years. And I don't want to brag, but I was All-State in basketball, first team All-State, Chicago Tribune. I had a full ride to Southern in baseball. I never had a coach. I went to the Notre Dame camp. That was mainly just to jack around. Because my dad went to Notre Dame, I wanted to go over there. But what I did do is my father built a basketball goal in our driveway and put it at 8 feet. I never shot at a 10-foot basket unless I was playing with my older uncles or until I got to seventh grade. The jump shot I had in seventh grade was the jump shot I had when I was a senior in high school. And then in baseball, my dad built a board that we hung on our garage door. Had the strike zone in it. We played rubber ball. I don't know if anybody knows what a rubber ball is anymore. It's like your indoor practice ball. The buddies from the neighborhood would come over, and if you hit it across the road, if you hit it in the road, it was a single. If you hit it over the road, it was a double. If you hit it over the sidewalk on the other side of the road, it was a triple. And if you hit the neighbor's house, it was a home run. And we played that every night. In the fall and winter, I would be outside scooping the snow off the driveway so I could shoot baskets. And, you know, that's the type of, you know, dedication kids, you know, got to have. And I played with the older guys.
But the reason you don't have to do that now, why is that?
Well, because
there's a league. You're not going to – you ain't going to sweep off your driveway because they're going to condition you. And I'm saying I'm guilty as a parent because we've conditioned the kids that – You don't have – why sweep off your driveway, dude? You're going to – you have to play on glass backboards in the gym with the condition at 71 degrees.
I would have loved to have had – my town of Henry was the same size as Alito. I would have loved to have had a YMCA in my town. I wouldn't have – no, I would have been in the Y playing with the guys all the time.
My house was the Y. When we played basketball, you came to my house because I had the biggest driveway. And I had a full half court, so that's where we played basketball at.
The other thing I was going to say, we played – I had – two other guys in my, John Keegan and Matt Magelli.
This is Henry, Illinois, by
the way.
This
is Henry, yeah.
Okay.
We played wiffle ball in the summer. We had a league. I stole my mother's flower and laid out lines and stuff like that. I had a backyard fence. If you hit it over the fence, you know, home run. One summer, I led the league with 249 home runs. That's the kind of stuff we did.
And then they tested you at the Henry Health Department.
But the thing was, we taped up those wiffle balls and we taped up those bats, and we put a backstop behind the hitter, and the pitcher fired fastballs at you, or, of course, you could make that wiffle ball break like whatever. That was tremendous training for your hitting and stuff like that. But we played enough games that I always remember that. I led the league with 249.
You were the backdrop for the Sandlot movie. All right. Appreciate John's observations. We are running out of time, but I want to know, we have another segment coming up. I want to get into a few more things with Heath Smith. He should have a weekly podcast, man. There's so much more we need to talk about, and we'll have more on WMJ and WMJ.com. Jim Taylor back on WRMJ Alito and WRMJ.com. Man, our time is quickly getting by us. I told Heath Smith this would go fast. It is. But I want to touch on a couple of more segments here when we talk about, like, the issue of time commitment with kids and how you deal with that as a coach. I'm going to give you an example of something that I heard of. And it involved a student-athlete pre-high school. Junior high, I believe, and played ASA softball, right? And then were in their school sport. So I think it was volleyball. And had a commitment where, you know, when school sponsored, we're talking about, you know, whatever school, junior high volleyball. So what's the requirement for junior high volleyball? You have practice basically every day after school, like any school sport, and then you play your school matches. So the kid then is playing on an ASA softball team, right? They're playing into the fall league. So the kid has to tell the coach, well, I'm not going to be able to practice during the week because I play volleyball, right? For the school. The requirement is you got to be at practice every day. Well, the kid and the parent is told, well, that volleyball coach needs to understand that you have a commitment to softball, too, so you need to make one of your softball practices during the week, and then you can commit the rest of the time to
volleyball. So what is the kid supposed to do in that situation? The kid, in my opinion, is, well, if you're not going to show up to your school related practice, you probably shouldn't be on the team. I mean, or you're not going to play or whatever, because you're it's a school sponsored sport. What about running into those type of issues in the overlap when, like I say, these sports are not, you know, these sports are multi-season sports now. It's just not one season, whatever you play.
School sports come first, and that's something we talk about in our meeting.
But then if the kid really wants to be, though, play on that elite whatever team, what are they supposed to do on that?
Well, and that's a choice. I guess that's a choice that, as coaches, we're making to make.
And yet that's why we ask kids don't play multiple sports.
Yeah. And again, you know, when it comes to that, school sports always come first. And it kind of, not really kind of pushing, but as a Sherrard coach, how – you know, we talked about this with our kids last year. How cool was it last year when we played in that sectional final game at Rock Ridge, when that whole side was full of purple and gold and Faith went down and we still held? You're not going to find that anywhere. And that's where school sport, I think the school spirit, the community coming together, you don't get that at the ASA or the travel ball level. And not saying there's nothing wrong with that, but I think there's something special about school sports. You get 4 years of high school sports, and, you know, a lot of times it's only two at the varsity level. And, you know, I'm guessing you can bring those kids back in that played on that team and ask them about that game. And I'm guessing number one memory of their high school basketball career was probably that Thursday night at Rock Ridge. I mean, that was an electric atmosphere for a girls' basketball game. I mean, no cheerleaders, no bands. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that whole Sherrard side was purple and gold. And I'm guessing the Eureka people probably thought, where'd they bust these people in from? And that's kind of the special thing about school sports. I think we try to get our kids to understand at a young age. That could be you in 4 years or 5 years. Wasn't that fun to be at the game? And all the girls were like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's something you got to – it's part of the buy-in, trying to get them to understand what we're trying to accomplish and what the school sport's all about.
All right, and kind of how we'll wind this down, the foundation of how this begins is it's the head coach at the top of the varsity program. He or she has to really have.
And we got the best in the area.
Yeah,
basketball.
They have to have the hands on what we're trying to focus. I know, you know, the football situation here when you have the meeting at high school. You know, hey, it's a 4 year, 6 year, 7 year, 8 year, whatever. When you start playing, it's not. And we're worried about the final 2 years of your input in this program. The primary, the initial years are the program development. But it takes true leadership at the top by the head coach to determine what direction that program is headed in terms of the actual development. And they have to factor in, we have to have some success. I mean, they have to find out what the equation is, the success of terms of winning and losing even at the young level, but more importantly, how you counterbalance that with actual program development. People don't understand how difficult that equation is to make work. And I think the guy at the top or the girl at the top has to really be the person that decides that.
Yeah, and, you know, we're lucky over who we have. We have Coach Swanson, and not, like I said, he's the best in the area, and I'm not slighting any other coaches. I feel every time we go in a game, we got a chance to win because Coach Swanson is just that good. But when you talk about building a program, and you know, it starts with him. And, I know last year talking about the same thing this year is our youth, all the way down to our youth program. It's almost the same coaches. You know, Logan coached the sixth and fifth grade. Ken Fry helped with the sixth grade a little bit. I did. Coach Swanson at the fourth, and I helped with the third grade. But it's a program buy-in. It starts at the top, and what he dictates and gets those high school kids to believe in, you know, and then they come back to the younger kids at junior high, and it's just it starts at the top, and everybody's got to have a CEO somewhere, and Coach Swanson's our CEO of our program, and he does a fantastic job of being organized, having stuff ready, getting the girls recognized, and that's before you even played a basketball game. So we're lucky, and it's kind of like what Aledo has down here or Mercer County for football, what they had for 25 years is, you know, you start to build that culture, that program, and kids just want to be a part of it, and give Coach Swanson a ton of credit in the world for what he's done for our girls in our program, just because, you know, when I was in high school, our girls program wasn't very successful, and we had very long stretches where we didn't win. And, you know, I know Coach Entz come in and kind of got it rolling, and then Coach Swanson just kind of knocked it out of the park.
Heath Smith, our time is up. Man, thank you. Awesome.
No problem.
And for those people that joined us late, I'll upload the whole thing so you can catch the whole thing.
Don't waste your time listening to it.
All right, that'll do it on the WRMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning.